Morning, gentlemen. It's Football Scoop Podcast. It's week 10. We're going to talk college football. I've got college football experts, Zach Barnett, John Bryce. I am Scott Roussel. I'm going to play host for this one because that's what you do. All right. The week already started. Kennesaw State just keeps racking up wins. Jerry Mack, you are a bad man. Good football coach. On the opposite end, Middle Tennessee State just keeps losing football games. They have one win on the season, seven losses. That's not good. I was fairly shocked to see. I just looked this up this morning. Derek Mason, in his final two seasons at Vanderbilt and his first two seasons here at MTSU, has seven total wins over four seasons.
Yeah, it's a bad trajectory. That was an ugly game for MTSU Wednesday night. Had ample opportunity to win it. Credit to Charles Kelly and his first-year staff at Jacksonville State for finding a way to get it done late. But that's sort of the tail of the tape for MTSU. It keeps finding ways to lose football games, whereas Jerry Mack and the Owls are bowl eligible. And not only that, they remain in conference championship contention just in year two of being a full FBS program.
Yeah, I wrote about Jerry Mack this week for my So You Want to Hire a New Kurt Cignetti piece. And I knew this, but reacquainting myself with it, I gained a newfound respect for Jerry Mack because he did the move. I'm an FCS head coach. I got to go be an assistant at the top level to get a head coaching job. And I'm sure that journey took longer than he anticipated. It was 7 years between North Carolina Central and Kennesaw State, including a year as a Jaguars running backs coach, which I'm sure he never envisioned happening when he left the head coach job. It was like, I'm an NFL assistant. How did this happen? But now he's obviously back at Kennesaw State having great success. So it feel good for him.
And he was in the mix for a couple other jobs and guys passed, you know, him over for somebody else that hasn't worked out real well.
Yeah, like MTSU.
Yeah, that one, for example. Yeah. Okay, so tonight, Thursday night, we've got two ball games. Marshall's at Coastal. I think that's going to be back and forth. And then Tulane has to go to UTSA. Tulane, bell of the ball, right? John Sumrall does a great job. Unbelievable. Quarterback came in right before the season and is just a baller. But UTSA at home is pretty good.
Yeah, UTSA has won 23 straight home conference games. We got to put in conference because Jeff Traylor for his first 4 years and Jeff Traylor over the last two have been different. Let's see. I have the numbers in front of me because I wrote about this for Football Scoops on the line. Let me find it. So he was 32-9 from 21 to 23, 24-2 in conference play over those three seasons. Since then, just 10-9 and 5-5. And they lost at home to Texas State, their little brother rival, in September. So he's lost some assistants to bigger jobs, most notably Will Stein. The criticism has been that he's been a different head coach without Frank Wilson as his quarterback. So UTSA needs some Alamo Dome magic for this one because they can really use a win. Tulane's been on a different trajectory than UTSA over these last two seasons.
And then that other game, Tony Gibson, first-year head coach at Marshall, doing a great job for the Thundering Herd. Coastal Carolina has been very much up and down. Had a quality win of late to sort of quell some of the noise around that program. But Coastal Carolina needs to keep winning to find some stability within that program. Whereas, you know, Tony Gibson, what he's doing there with Marshall, and then he's got a really good offensive staff with Rod Smith and Rod McDowell and Chancey Stuckey. I love what they're doing on offense. So that one should be a highly entertaining game.
Yeah, this is basically a Sun Belt semifinal game or Sun Belt East because both these teams will have one loss in conference play. James Madison's 5-0. They both have James Madison ahead of them. So the loser's basically out. The winner is assuming they win out, going to play basically a division championship game against James Madison.
Jumping forward to Friday, Memphis needs to win. Rice has been an upstart. Scott Abel's done a great job. Memphis should handle that game, but is that Rice? We'll see. North Carolina is at Syracuse. Could be a game. Fran Brown's a heck of a ball coach. I don't know what kind of got out. Well, they lost the quarterback. Been a different team since then.
Yeah, I mean, for Memphis, you can't assume anything because Memphis is the team that forgot to show up and lost to UAB for the first time in 14 years, right after UAB had fired Trent Dilfer. And then Memphis is the team that showed as much resiliency as any team or program in college football last weekend to beat Alex Golish in South Florida again, improve and see Silverfield improve to 3-0 against Alex Golish, and to again remain very viable in that top 2 to 3 candidates to be the group of five playoff team. So Rice will limit possessions in this game, which always ratchets up the pressure on Memphis's offense.
Yeah, I like Rice in this one. Scott Abel's offense is not fun to prepare for if you have 2 weeks, and especially a short week on the road. We've seen this is a tough spot for anyone, the short week road game. As John mentioned, Memphis has been up and down, it's fair to say, over these past two games. So, and some places are tough to play because they have so many fans and they make so much noise. Other places are tough to play because they have so little fans and they make so little noise. And Rice is that second category, but it's tough to play regardless if you're a visitor. So I'm on the L's here.
I like I hear you. It's a unique offense. Memphis defense coordinator Jordan Hayes he brings it. So
I to John's point, I think this could be one of those where if you're Memphis and you're down 10-3 late second half, Rice is getting the ball, or late second quarter, Rice is getting the ball start. You drive, turn over on downs at like the 35, and you're like, crap, we're in danger here. We're only going to touch the ball maybe four more times the rest of this game.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we're in week 10. Probably in like week 2, week 3, we were looking forward to this one. It's going to be a number 1 versus number 2, number 3. Penn State's at Ohio State. And boy, the world has changed in 7 weeks.
Yeah, both of these teams have had 2 weeks to prepare. Penn State's players and coaches are preparing for whatever's next for them and their life's journey. Ohio State's players and coaches are preparing to go win a national championship. So I think you have the Jim Knowles factor. I think Ohio State's coaches are going to do everything they can to embarrass Jim Knowles in front of their home crowd. So I would not be surprised at all to see a 35-3 type Buckeyes win.
Yeah, I mean, I would only be surprised in that Penn State still has some very quality players, and Penn State certainly forgot to show up against UCLA and then rallied late and then added some cosmetic brushstrokes to that. But the Nittany Lions, for the way things have unraveled, they just haven't been run out of a stadium for an entire four quarters. They got ran out of the Rose Bowl for a half and then remembered how to play football, and it was all too late. So I would be surprised if Penn State just mails it in and doesn't show up for this game, just because we have not seen that out of Penn State, and because we've seen some quote-unquote competitive pride, competitive character out of the Nittany Lions. And as good as Ohio State is and has been, Zach, like, I don't necessarily see a 35-3 game just because Ohio State is still working through some things offensively. Julian Sayin is playing extremely good football, but this is not the Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, Jeremiah Smith machine with Will Howard triggering the offense of a year ago.
Yeah, to be clear, I don't think necessarily a 35-3 game represents Penn State laying down. I just think Ohio State's that much better than them. And I foresee a 7-0 after the first, 14-0 after the second, 21-3. Then they just slowly separate themselves.
Yeah. 31-10 wouldn't surprise me.
I'm with Zach. All right, I'm gonna stay in that early 11 a.m. window because there's some great ball. Texas is favored at home versus Vanderbilt, small margin. Is Arch gonna play, Zach? Do we know?
I don't think anyone knows that. So he practiced as of Wednesday. I think they're probably practicing this morning right now. But to what extent did he practice? I don't know. If he's clear, if the doctors clear him at 10:30 local time, does he get the start? I don't have that answer. I think they're probably going on both tracks. And if you're Vanderbilt, you certainly got to prepare for both. Matthew Caldwell's done well in his very limited action. I think he's maybe better in some aspects than Arch has seen so far. Certainly not the athlete that Arch is. But that offensive line is terrible for Texas, and that's not changing. And Vanderbilt, as we know, is very dangerous. Pete Kwiatkowski loves to play a bend, don't break type defense, which I think probably plays to Vanderbilt's favor because a 6-minute drive where you score 3 points is a success for Vanderbilt. And similar to the Rice-Memphis game, it could be one of those situations where it's like Vanderbilt's up 10-3 at halftime, goes on a 6-minute field goal drive, and suddenly Texas, you're getting the ball with 8.5 minutes in the third quarter. You're like, we're in real danger here, even though you're playing close to them. So I foresee either a close Texas win or a Vanderbilt 14-17 point win.
What does Pavia do if he wins this game?
The rest of the team flies back. He's on 6th Street and finds his way home on Sunday.
No, you're wrong. If Pavia wins this game, he puts a damn saddle on Bevo and rides across the field. Like, he still gets on the charter. He's not stupid, but he gets his signature moment. Baker Mayfield planted a flag. Diego Pavia rides Bevo.
It's all possible. Miami is at SMU. I think that's a ball game, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I talked to a close buddy that's an SMU alum, and losing at Wake last night really took the wind out of their sails. SMU was undefeated in ACC play. This is homecoming. You have Miami in town, and to lose that one, even though SMU's not what they've been and not a national championship contender, you're still undefeated in conference play. But this is Miami's first game outside the state of Florida since the 2024 Cheez-It Bowl. Should be clear skies, but temps in the 50s, 60s. So if you're a Miami football player, that's basically the 20s or 30s to everyone else. So who knows?
Yeah, I think, Miami has had the lingering effects of the really poor performance against Louisville, which I think really emphasizes the need for the Canes to get off to a fast start in this game. Otherwise, I think you allow doubts to creep in, especially on Halloween night, if you start seeing even more ghosts. If you saw ghosts the last time or 2 times ago when you threw 5 picks, and then you saw camouflage receivers a week ago, what happens when you play on Halloween night if you get off to a slow start?
It's been more than a calendar year since Miami won a game outside of the state of Florida.
That's wild.
Good talk. All right, Zach, game of the day, Navy at North Texas. Give it to me.
Yeah, this is the only game this weekend pitting 2 7-win teams. So North Texas is first in the country in scoring. Drew Messemaker's fourth in passing. Navy is 102nd in pass efficiency defense. Navy is second in the country in yards per play, first by a mile in rushing offense. They're at almost 320 yards per game. Second place, Air Force is in the 280s. North Texas is 120th in rush defense. So the last time North Texas hosted a service academy, they allowed Army to go on a 21-play, near 14-minute drive. I wrote in detail about the 2007 Navy-North Texas game that ended in a 74-62 final, which was at the time the highest-scoring FBS game ever, still the highest-scoring half and quarter ever. So I'm certainly not predicting a 74-62 game, but the winner will be in the 50s of this game. The loser will be in the 40s.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of points, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. All right. I'm looking forward to seeing some of it.
Hammer the over is what I took from this. Not to again get a visit from Scott's La Cosa Nostra family, but hammer the over.
I'm seeing an over under 65.5.
Yeah, that's
might what I'm not saying. Get to 90s, but they're not being held below 65.
All right,
Zach says put the house. All right, mm-hmm. Okay.
How much space you got, Zach? just in case it goes wrong.
Cocktail party, Georgia, Florida. Talk to me.
Yeah, I think Georgia. I think Georgia's going to have to be ready to play. I fully expect Florida, with 2 weeks to prepare, Florida's defense has been pretty stable all season long. You can't really pinpoint a bunch of the Gators' problems this season on their defense. It's been an erratic and stubborn offense. Georgia has had some moments where it's been really dynamic on offense, but I still do not remotely trust Georgia's offense in a series in, series out, game in, game out setting just yet. I'm just not there with Stockton, and I'm not there with Mike Bobo, and I'm not there with the lack of overall dynamism in their offense other than at the tight end position. And I don't think they're the same Georgia team on either line of scrimmage. And so because of that, you know, I love this rivalry. I've loved this rivalry since I was a kid. It's fun to watch it. So I would be inherently disappointed if it's a blowout because of that. But I'll be disappointed if it's a blowout because it's just not what I'm expecting.
Yeah, I echo John. I expect a spirited Florida effort. I don't expect Penn State, Ohio State, even though they're very similar vibes to these games. Florida players you're playing at this point to put out tape for your next opportunity, wherever that is. You might be offered to go somewhere else. You might be told to go somewhere else. You have no idea. So you have all the incentive in the world to go out and play your best. I expect it, like John, a sloppy game where Georgia wins something like 31-21, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's only – the line is only the dogs by 7.5. And again, we've seen Georgia more or less forget to show up or get taken out of showing up in the first half of games against Tennessee and Alabama. And if Georgia does that in this game, then again, I'm not convinced that it will march up and down the field on the Florida defense to just have its way with the Gators. And then Billy Gonzalez knows this rivalry so well that I would be also disappointed if the guys aren't spirited to play for him and in this rivalry. I mean, he's got more than a decade at Florida across maybe mm-hmm. four different head coaches. I would imagine that's a record for just about any SEC assistant. Maybe you got Rodney Garner in a similar situation for all the iterations of his career, but that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, and to your point, John, the Georgia defense did not show up for the first half of that. They took that first half off against Ole Miss, and fortunately, the Georgia offense played out of its mind in that game.
Yeah, that's another great point. And they took the first half off against Tennessee as well. Let's remember, that game was 21-7, maybe before the end of the first quarter. Like Tennessee had a two-touchdown lead, and then Alabama was up 14-0 and 21-7 and 24-7 or something and held on to win. Kirby Smart said it, so I'm not saying anything he hasn't said or that he's shied away from, but the portal has forever changed the depth of these teams, and he's not stocking first-round draft picks and at the number three spot on his defensive line mm-hmm. anymore.
Yep, and tailbacks. All right, Texas Tech is at Kansas State. Kansas State did what they did to Kansas. Texas Tech needs to start stacking wins. Zach, how you see it?
Yeah, you saw Joey McGuire came out and basically came as close as any college football coach will ever come to saying we load managed our player. But he straight up admitted, like, we could have played Barron Morton against Oklahoma State, but Oklahoma State's terrible, so we held him out. So he'll be back here, which they need him to be back because their backup, Will Hammond, is out for the year with an ACL injury. So that, to me, is the biggest thing, risk factor for Texas Tech moving forward is Barron Morton. Most important ability is availability, and he's constantly been in and out of the lineup. Seems like his whole career there. So if he's healthy, I mean, K-State should be flying high after blowing out Kansas at Kansas. I still expect Tech to win, but they're going to have to earn this one. Unlike last week.
Yeah, that's sort of how I see it. Like, this is another one. Frankly, I think the Red Raiders are pretty lucky this is a matinee kickoff instead of an evening kickoff, because I would really have them on mega upset alert if this was under the lights in Manhattan. But the lights won't have to come on until the start of the third quarter or something like that, since we got a 3:30 kick. And minder, to all of our faithful listeners, your clocks fall back this weekend. You're welcome. But I really think like Tech needs a fast start, because if you let Kansas State feed off the home crowd and get out early, I'm just not convinced Tech comes back.
And I mean, I can count on one hand the amount of times I've said this, but the Tech defense sets such a high baseline that if they play like they've played so far, then you should be able to get off to that fast start.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, South Carolina is in Oxford, and it's an interesting situation. South Carolina's got talent galore, but South Carolina has lost 5 of 6 all in conference. Their only win was a home game versus Kentucky. So they've lost 3 in a row, 5 of 6. If they lose at Ole Miss, they go to A&M, they lose there. Shane Beamer was thinking he was good where he was thinking he was receiving overtures from Virginia Tech. Now he's looking at a 1-win SEC. Buddy.
Yeah, I mean, it was thrown out there by someone this week, like with all the sharks already in the pool, programs looking for head coaches. Obviously, LSU, Florida within the SEC alone are some of these – yeah, Arkansas as well. Are some of these the mid-level schools, are you now incentivized to hold on to a coach that you might have otherwise fired and then just roll it back and hope to be at the top of the chain next? And my mind immediately went to South Carolina. That's just me. That's just my opinion, speculating all that stuff. But when someone laid out a program that otherwise might – that's where I went, because they're just not impressive, dynamic at all on offense. And Shane's been there a while.
So what you're saying is they're not very good, but South Carolina's just going to accept that?
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with Zach on this. And I'm sure Shane Beamer will disagree with us on this, but is like, if you gave Ole Miss South Carolina's offensive players this weekend, they would run the house on Ole Miss or South Carolina, like whatever scenario you want to be. But because South Carolina's offensive players are limited in South Carolina's offensive system, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around a scenario where the Gamecocks can win this game at Ole Miss. But that doesn't mean they're not talented. They should have a much better record than what they do. It's their talent is being criminally underutilized. And you can make the contention that Lenore Sellers is being underdeveloped in the process. I think that's a fair one to make. But again, like I talked to an SEC coach midweek, and yes, nobody would go into a lineup. Nobody would have a backyard football draft and say, I'm going to take Trinidad Chambliss over Lenore Sellers. Like, you can respect the hell out of what Trinidad Chambliss is doing, but if you're having your backyard football draft, you're taking Lenore Sellers every time. That's my point. Like, South Carolina has plenty of talent to be better than it is. It is not equaling the sum of its parts. It's arguably the most disappointing team this season in college football. And who knew that this year's Palmetto Bowl might be the only bowl game for either Clemson or South Carolina?
I think while we've been dumping on South Carolina, I do think this week's a challenge for Lane, because I pointed out that you get one of Georgia at or Oklahoma and you're kind of home free. And they played well, no shame in losing at Georgia, and then got the win at Oklahoma. Now you're on the downward slope with no more ranked teams, 3 straight home games. If I pointed out, people in Mississippi have pointed out, that talks reach the players. So if you're Lane, you got to remember, hey, we found a way to lose at home to Kentucky last year. We found a way to lose at Florida last year. So we got to keep the pedal to the metal because we're home free so long as we keep winning.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I think because of especially those 2 losses last year, Kentucky early in the season before Kentucky had Kentuckied, and then Florida late in the season when the Gators were rallying to temporarily get Billy Napier off the hangman's platform. So I think because of that, though, that they will be dialed in. Also, I think because Ole Miss sleptwalked through the Washington State game a couple of weeks ago, that will be front and center in the Rebels' minds as well. So I think Ole Miss handles business here. But now, again, talking to an SEC coach this week, they were raving about Dylan Stewart the star South Carolina defensive player. So again, there's talent there for the Gamecocks, but the overall has not been there.
Yeah. Nighttime, I like Lane in that one. Georgia Tech is at NC State. Georgia Tech always seems beat up. NC State is a wounded dog. NC State, sneak up and get.
NC State is capable of it with C.J. Bailey at quarterback. He does some nice things. NC State's trying to plant the flag and salvage its season. Things are not going well in Raleigh. You've got Boo Corrigan coming out this week saying, I don't believe in firing coaches midseason. That's like Zach's proverbial kiss of death from the AD a lot of times. Like, you just rather your AD not talk in season unless he's literally talking to give you a public contract extension. So, you know, NC State coaches are very cognizant of what's swirling about that program and what's swirling about their futures. So once again, it's one of those. And Tech, for all it's done, and it's as good against ranked teams under Brent Key as any program in college football, it tends to have one clunker a year against a non-ranked team. It can't let that be this week.
Right.
I would encourage everyone to go find my friend Dave Wilson and David Hale's piece on Haynes King that they wrote for ESPN.com. It talked about, just dive into, how is this guy just so tough? He's the son of a legendary Texas high school coach who led them to a long-awaited state title, went to A&M. Obviously didn't work out there. Fortunately, the rules allowed him to find a place where his talents can be utilized at Georgia Tech. That offense is perfect for him, and you'll come away respecting Haynes King even more than you already do. So he's just a great college football player and will be a great coach someday.
Good stuff. Thank you, Zach. Speaking of, you'd rather your athletic director not say anything. Hugh Freeze went out and kind of said, boy, I sure would like it if my AD would come out and say something. And his AD has said
nothing. That's like telling your new girlfriend, I love you, and you just hear back, thanks.
That is straight up Costanza in the car finally deciding he's going to tell her he loves her. And then he's convinced, thanks to Kramer, it's only because she doesn't hear well out of her left ear. So he turns her face and says, I love you. No, I heard you. We're good. What's for dinner? I heard you. So stop telling me, Zach.
I mean, I hope Hugh stays at Auburn, because how else are we going to get the sort of entertainment that has come from this Auburn season so far? I mean, think about where we started with different play colors on every. Let's keep this moving.
You know, the question we get, that's a really good point from you, Zach. The question is, what if this was a Nebraska-Missouri redo and Auburn got a fifth down? Who the hell would call Auburn's offense on fifth down?
The world's brightest minds wouldn't have an answer to that question. It's like, when did time begin? How can you tell?
The world's right, nor would we.
Kentucky is like a 10-11 point dog at Auburn. Kentucky's offense is putrid. And yet you're still not massively confident that Auburn runs away.
Yeah, Cutter Bowley, his status is key. Like, he's shown some foundational abilities for the Kentucky offense. Bush Hamden now finally has an offense at Kentucky that has scored. It just came when Tennessee didn't care last week because the Vols offense was running up and down the synthetic bluegrass and scoring at will. So I do like Kentucky to keep this game close, but I do expect Auburn to get another win, much as it did last week against Arkansas, as much because its opposition finds a way to lose.
Okay, I got a debate with Shehan Jaraj of CBS over this. I'm interested in you guys' perspective. We're talking about schools that could make a change but may opt not to. Mark Stoops is still Kentucky's winningest coach since Bear Bryant in terms of total victories and percentage. The fact that he's 1-12 in SEC play over the last two seasons and counting. So then what they've gotten over the last two seasons?
Yes, because they've paid more. They've spent more. Like, it's fair. It's fair because Kentucky has put the commitment there in Mark Stoops. It wouldn't have been fair 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when it was Bill Curry and you couldn't wait for Pitino's Bambinos to take the court and it was all basketball all the time. Kentucky has invested at a level that is top 40 or 50 nationally in college football into its roster, and it's invested even more than that from a coaching salary standpoint. So it's absolutely fair. There's not homegrown talent, but as we've outlined on this podcast repeatedly, especially the last 10 days or so, homegrown talent doesn't matter nearly as much in college football today as it did even 5 years ago.
So I feel like they've lost. Mark sometimes has made outstanding staff hires. Sometimes he's really not. And on offense and defense, you lost Liam Cohen, and on defense, you lost John Sumrall. And those are two dudes, right? We've all now seen their growth and their progression. And he just hasn't backfilled real well. So do you say, Mark's like, hey, I did this at Kentucky just a couple of seasons ago. You say, give me another year. I'm like, okay. But, you know, I got to get it right.
I think it matters how they finish. Like, when you say, give me another year, got to get it right. Like, I'm not saying he hasn't earned that year, but they can't go 0 for November. And they can't get washed out by Louisville, which is surging again, which also, by the way, took Mark Stoops' consigliere in the middle of summer and stole him away from the program. So there are all these subplots to it that it's not continuing to not do. And it's also because you used to think, okay, Kentucky is in the hall of very okay. And now all of a sudden, they've been completely passed by Missouri. They've been completely passed by Vanderbilt. Their only true company in the SEC right now is Mississippi State. But Mississippi State looks like a vastly improved football team, and Kentucky looks like the same terrible football team.
I mean, you had overtime, first and goal from the four, third and goal from the one. You can't punch it in when you know the other offense can't score without help of their special teams. And at that point in the game, there was no punt returner to put their own offense at the five-yard line. So you find a way to get 1 yard in two plays, you more than likely win that game, and we're probably not having this conversation. Yep. And, I mean, you go back to that game, Mark knew it immediately. I mean, he crumpled, like he was in pain after that field goal went through because he knew – what an opportunity they just blown.
Yep. Yep. All right. Oklahoma comes to Tennessee, Rocky Top. They're going dark, JB.
Dark mode for the Vols. They're doing the spooky Halloween, the spooky Rocky Top, which is pretty cool. Musical element that they've added some haunting sounds to Rocky Top and lean into the banjo and do some neat things. It's a 10-year redo, if you can believe it, of Baker Mayfield and the Sooners coming in to Neyland Stadium in one of the loudest games ever in Neyland Stadium, a game that went overtime, and the Sooners found a way to win, and Josh Dobbs threw a really debilitating interception in overtime that cost the Vols. Tennessee should have never allowed that game to go to overtime. That was Derek Barnett chasing Baker Mayfield all over the field, and if Derek Barnett gets one sack on the last drive or just trips Baker Mayfield, became Baker Houdini that night, and then Oklahoma ran it to a great season. Tennessee still had a nice season but never reached its potential. Loss to come from ahead game 2 weeks later at Florida when that series still had gone completely in the Gators' way. But this is to me, the game of the weekend. There's so many subplots. That one I just outlined, obviously, Josh Heupel was a Heisman runner-up at Oklahoma, then was fired from Oklahoma. Not a lot of love lost there. Ain't no love in Oklahoma, some people would say. And then it's a playoff eliminator. So this is playoff football on the first Saturday night of November, and it's playoff football in Neyland Stadium. The Vols fans want to host a college football playoff game. You're hosting one.
This Saturday. One is absolutely massive for Brent Venables in Oklahoma because you spent all offseason Oklahoma fans saying, yeah, we get to 9-3, 8-4, that would be a solid season. And now you're looking at more 9-3, 8-4, and it feels quite a bit different when you start 5-0. So if you go from 5-0 to 6-3, it's hard to feel great about that. Your offense has fallen apart since the John Mateer injury. He's just not—he's not even in the top 100 most efficient passers over the month of October. And on the other side, then as John mentioned, you have Josh Heupel, national champion, you fired, and you also have Seth Luttrell, teammate of Josh Heupel, so you also fired, coaching for Tennessee. So it would be extraordinarily painful in multiple ways, Oklahoma, and for Brent Venables in particular, to lose this game.
Amen. All right, I got two more for you guys. USC is at Nebraska, and then I'll get to the game of the night, perhaps. It is.
Excited to watch this one because my faith in either one winning this game is close to zero, but one of them has to win it. I mean, how can you back Lincoln Riley and USC at a road game in the Midwest? They're like 0-6 in that scenario. How can you back Matt Rhule and Nebraska against an equally talented team? They nearly find a way to lose to Northwestern last week. They're experts. They're the Murphy's Law program finding a way to lose close games. To the point where they celebrate winning a close game over Maryland when they should have won by 14 points. I'm taking either. Can't wait to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a noon kick.
It's night.
So,
No.
NBC's got a doubleheader on Saturday. The first one we didn't mention, Illinois, or Rutgers at Illinois.
Yeah.
Millions for that one. I was looking at the trusty AP Top 25, and it had this as a 1 o'clock Eastern kickoff in Lincoln. So that's okay. That's on me. But I do have this nugget for you. I need to double check it, but it's a stat I got this morning. The Trojans are ranked number 22, number 23 in the AP Top 25. Anyone know Matt Rhule's last win against a ranked opponent?
I think it was at Temple.
You are correct. December 3rd, 2016, I believe, is the last time Matt Rhule got a win against a ranked opponent when Temple beat Navy. So
9 years ago.
9 years ago. Matt Rhule and the Huskers. Matt Rhule trying to snap a personal one. Nebraska's got its own streak of misery and agony. But this is a huge one. This one keeps USC a viable playoff contender deep into November. A loss ratchets up all the whispers about can Lincoln and Riley truly get it done at USC.
USC has lost their last two road games at Illinois, at Notre Dame. They're at Nebraska, and they're a touchdown favorite. What's that say about Nebraska? Ooh, gracious. All right, let's talk game of the night. Cincinnati is at Utah. This is a straight-up battle. Two strong football teams. Two want to just say, hey, I'm going to get that 1 yard that I need. Stop me.
Yeah, we mentioned that Matt Rhule, Nebraska, hasn't beaten a ranked team. Well, he beat Cincinnati, who is now ranked, but was not ranked at the time. Season was to Nebraska. They played – got really good quarterback play at Lake Dallas High School's own Brendan Sorsby, and they're playing really good defense. But you think you do those things in the Big 12 until you go to Salt Lake City at night. Utah's quarterback seems like John. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's questions of who would play quarterback at Utah, which is nothing new for that program. But I like Cincinnati.
You like Cincinnati in this game? No, it's not happening. Cincinnati starting running back, I think, also is out for this game. Sorsby is the difference. Like Sorsby gives Cincinnati a chance really to win any game right now. Zach, you're correct about that. He's been – Cincinnati was really high on him going into the season and felt very confident that he was a difference maker. They invested heavily to keep him on their roster. I mean heavily. He's making seven figures. He's a very, very good player. he will give them a chance basically in every single game. The physicality of Utah will handle this contest, and whether it's Devin Dampier or Bird Ficklin, what a name, running the offense for Utah, it's not going to matter because Utah's physicality is going to carry the day in this contest, especially under the lights with the snow-capped Wasatch Mountains surrounding Rice-Eccles Stadium.
I have a hard time picking a road team at Utah at night.
Texas Tech went there and won by 24. That was the day, but it was the same stadium, same team.
No, it wasn't. It was Texas Tech, not Cincinnati, bro.
So, Zach, not Zach the
same
is,
team.
Zach has a three-game lead in our picks. That might be zero we'll by the end of this week. We'll see. Gentlemen, any other games you want to make?
I thought I had one more, but I've probably failed you on this one. So
Army at Air Force. I mean, there's a bunch of good games that new window. Army at Air Force is keeping an eye on. Air Force has already lost to Navy. So if they lose, that'd be two straight years for them going over in the Commanders and Chiefs and Commander in Chiefs trophy and Army. If they win, it sets up the battle for it in Army Navy December 13th.
America always wins.
Yeah. Mercer Furman is a great FCS game that has SoCon title implications. Mike Jacobs, since an early season loss and then a suspended game, has had Mercer absolutely cooking. This is not Clay Hendricks' best Furman team ever, but they're 5-3, found a way to claw out a win last week against the Citadel. So that's an important FCS level game there. I thought there was one more FCS game I was really fired up for. But I guess I'm not very good at this, so I apologize.
All good. We don't prepare for these things. We do them all off the cuff. We have football staff, and we love doing this with you guys. Appreciate everybody following along. Had a couple of people tweet at me saying that, like, random talent. Amen.
Let's do it.
And happy Halloween.
Everybody,
trick or treat. Trick or treat.